Conversations with Joan Lewis.
Well, Joan, welcome back from Bavaria.
I think I have finally caught up on my sleep. It was an incredible week for all of us in the media who are covering the Holy Father for, I mean, a number of reasons. It was a historic trip. It was a personal trip. It was very moving for him just to watch him, even when he wasn't, you know, talking to a crowd in a microphone and so forth. So it was an incredible week, but also because it's not that he went to Munich, where naturally for 5 years he was the archbishop. Many of his events were outside of Munich. So we would have to get on a train, or I got on a train in the morning, and you travel 1.5 to 2 hours to get to the place. Then you had to come back at night. And you know, as I was visiting these beautiful places and walking around these cobblestone streets and beautiful piazzas and these outdoor cafes and the whole thing, I was thinking, I can understand, not just Regensburg, but certainly importantly Regensburg, I can understand how the Holy Father would miss that. Here he had planned on going back to Germany, retiring as a cardinal, writing perhaps further memoirs, because we already have milestones, the first 50 years of his life, writing further memoirs, teaching, which he so loves to do. And I could see how he could miss it. The little shrine town of Altötting, and so many other places that we saw him visit and places he did not visit that would like to have seen him.
The whole underlying theme of the Pope's visit to Bavaria was very, very strongly Marian.
It was, and I think that we're beginning to understand more and more as we listen to him, as we watch him in liturgies, as we saw on this trip, his great, great love for Mary. John Paul II, everybody in the world knew about that. He spoke about it very often. I think that we're now beginning to realize that Benedict is also speaking about it very often. I mean, his first visit in Munich after the airport was Marienplatz in the Mary's Square, right in the center of the city, with that magnificent statue, and you could see him moved. He was, you know, very emotional in that square, and then at other places, smaller. Monday, when he went to Altötting, and he said the open air mass for tickets had been given out for 30,000 people, and there were at least 60,000.
How they fitted in, I don't know, because it's such a tiny place.
Well, some of the people were not even within reach of the square. But anyway, it was a wonderful trip. I was comparing it mentally the first days to having been in Poland and having been in Valencia with the Holy Father.
The welcome was joyful. You could see that the Holy Father was deeply happy himself to be back in Bavaria. There wasn't an exuberance needed. It was the deep satisfaction of having come home.
Oh, that was very noticeable at every single stop he made, whether he talked with children, whether he was praying in Marienplatz, delivering his homily at Mass or whatever. But I got to Munich the day before he did. And what really struck me, because I got to all the other cities 1 or 2 days before the Pope did, what really struck me was how they downplayed, for example, decorations. Other cities, you couldn't walk 100 feet, you couldn't walk 6 blocks, a mile, without seeing yellow and white Vatican flags, banners hanging from balconies, and so forth. Is that the nature of the Poles? Is that the nature of the Spaniards? Perhaps more so, yes, than the nature of the Germans. In fact, one woman told me, she said, we consider something like decorations a very private thing, and in many ways we're a very private people.
Well, this is where the English and the Germans still have very, very much in common, because, of course, the Saxons came to Britain 1,000 years ago, but we still have very, very, very strong links in common. And in Germany, as in Britain, understatement is more important.
I saw it actually more in Munich than I did in Altötting, this wonderful little small town. I think it's like 13,000 people or something. Everybody came out. Every store was closed, I think, but a local bakery or something. And everybody came out for the mass. People came from, if it's a town of 13,000 and there was 70 or 60,000 there, they had to come from obviously neighboring cities and towns. And then in Regensburg. In Regensburg, in the center of the city, in particular, the pedestrian area only, if you will, with its gorgeous monuments, elegant stores, Tony cafes and restaurants and so forth, there was a lot more feeling of welcome home, Benedict. You could see it in the stores. You could see the banners, the Vatican flags, and of course the souvenirs were always there. They always are. But I think that for the Holy Father, it was a wonderful trip down memory lane. And I have to say, my most extraordinary memory is the 13th, September 13th, when he and his brother were spending time together at his brother's home in Regensburg, and then the house in Pentling that the Pope owns outside of Regensburg. A group of 15 or 20 of us journalists were taken by Bavarian tourism people to the towns where the Holy Father lived when he was young, where he went to boarding school, Traunstein, the famous St. Michael Seminary. We met an 83-year-old lady, Anna Maria Erlacher, who went to kindergarten with the Holy Father. She was 4 years older, but they weren't all the same age. The kids ranged from like 3 or 4 years old to maybe 8 years old. So it was there were four nuns that took care of him. She had wonderful stories to tell about Benedict. I started writing about it on my blog and will continue later. But then Traunstein, we met a cousin of his who was just, they were very, very simple, humble people who just couldn't understand this attention, although the cousin did say, well, it isn't every day that a family does have a pope in its history, certainly a living one. So it was a trip down memory lane, not our memories, but the pope's memory lane for a small group of us. And it was very, very touching to meet the people who were and are a part of his life now. I think what strikes so many people is after John Paul II not having any living relatives, when you hear the Pope talk of his brother, it's a great feeling. And they're both older men.
And it's nice to see them relate to each other as well. I mean, there was
exactly.
One occasion when the Pope was coming down off the altar and he waved to his brother.
Right.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Well, as a matter of fact, in Regensburg, when he left after Vespers, when the Pope left, and there were two people, I'm not sure who they were, escorting the Pope's brother, Monsignor Georg, down the center aisle, and the churches burst into applause. And the two people escorting him, just, you know, one of them had his arm, and he turned to him, and he said, "You do know that that applause is for you." And he just made this, he didn't say anything, he just made this, you know, oh, come on, this gesture saying, I don't believe it. And it was for him, indeed.
It's great.
He has a nice little place just not right in the center of Regensburg, on a very quiet street. He often, Monsignor Georg, answers the door himself for the get the mail. A friend of mine, her best friend, is the postman in that postwoman in that area. So, yes, it was a very good, wonderful, moving visit. And I know the Pope on the plane said a remarkable sentence when he was asked about the journalist, you know, about going back to it and so forth, and asked about his nostalgia. The Pope says, and I love this sentence, "My soul is filled with memories. I can always walk in the countryside of my memories." And you know how many of us even do that, too. I think it's wonderful.
Well, the visit to Bavaria showed that although the Holy Father said that Bavaria is in his heart, he is very much in the heart of Bavaria.
Indeed. We saw that from day one. Mm.
You've been listening to Joan Lewis. To find out more about Joan or to ask her a question, please visit our website.